This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. In the last 2 or 3 decades, public discussion seems to have shifted from looking to scholars and scientists and researchers and experts at universities to help inform the debate politicians, spinmeisters, and people with microphones determine. That is, what is sound science? All those university professors have been busy publishing in journals, which other researchers read, but don't always make it to the public at large, or if they do, they're distorted by news media, pundits, or just loudmouths who twist research to support their own beliefs. With us to discuss that disturbing trend is Andrew Hoffman. He's a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. He teaches and researches business sustainability. And I want to talk about a column you recently wrote. In it, you asked, should we, as academics, engage in the public and political discourse of the nation? And if so, how do we do it? I would add, why haven't people who study issues been out front and center in public discussions all along?
Well, it's a challenging issue. The coin of the realm in academia is scholarly publications, rigorous research, and the task of taking it the next step into the public domain is something that university professors are not given incentives to do, nor are we trained to do it. Yet I believe there are pressures both internal and external to the academy that are going to push us or are pushing us in that direction.
What do you mean not given the incentive?
When it comes to getting tenure and promotion, my year-end review, it's really all around my scholarly contributions. Engagement in practice is not really registers in the review of my academic performance. Now, I would add a small caveat that varies by school. Some schools more, some schools less, but on the whole, academics are incented to talk to other academics.
You also bring up the point that some academics fear the dangers of being misquoted. 41% in the survey you took said it was time-consuming, it was distracting. That's something I discussed with the researchers at a Chicago convention one time. Almost every one of them had a story about their research being oversimplified or distorted by the news media. I don't doubt that can be a problem, but there are many well-qualified journalists who are out there doing excellent reporting on studies and research. So what's the solution here between this wariness that the academy has and dealing with reporters to get their work exposed to the rest of the world?
Well, I think that part of it is training academics on how to do this. The idea of making it more accessible, many academics look at as dumbing it down and look at the task of disseminating their knowledge as somebody else's job. It's not theirs. And so incentives, evaluating academics on how much they change the discourse in the real world, not just within the academic world, could go a long way to start to change the system.
You brought up social media. If professors and researchers believe reporters are problematic, I mean, social media is outrageously wrong most of the time and purposely distorts science for political gain. My colleagues and I spend a lot of time, way too much time, trying to point out and point people to accurate reports or studies to disabuse them of some of the outright falsehoods on social media. And it's really time consuming. How should professors and researchers deal with this huge purveyor of misinformation?
Well, that, you know, certainly social media is a big part of the context right now. It allows a lot of information, both science and pseudoscience, to enter the public discourse. Phil Hanlon, the former provost at University of Michigan, described it as democratizing knowledge. So we academics could publish our papers in academic journals, and then some organization out there can say our work is crap. And if we don't know how to engage in that domain, that will be the lasting legacy. Our work will be crap. And so we need to start to figure out how to engage within social media, blogs, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the ways of getting information out there, while at the same time recognizing boundaries. And I want to add this point is very important. There has to be a line between the generation of knowledge and the advocacy of solutions based on that knowledge. And academics don't know where that line is. We don't know where that line is. We have to figure that out. And you can lose your credibility as an objective researcher if you find yourself getting too far down the advocacy line. So there is a line, but I think academia has generally tended far too much on the conservative side of that line and needs to start to push some of the boundaries.
Well, you've been involved in discussions on climate change. I've seen you speak. I've read your work. You're looking at public opinion about climate change as well and what affects public opinion. That issue is science, but it's swamped by politics. What's the lesson for academics when discussing something as controversial as climate change?
Well, to begin, we're talking about issues of science within the public. The National Science Foundation did a survey of the American public and found that 2/3 do not understand science or the scientific process. So we're dealing with a large group of the American population that is effectively scientifically illiterate. So bringing science to these people is a challenge. I've done it by trial and error. I've made some mistakes. I get hate mail. It stings. I post a blog and the comments section lights up with a lot of really angry vitriol that is aimed at something else, which is a lot of what my work is about. And so I have done it because I never got into this profession just to have at the end of my career citation counts. I got into this profession because I really wanted to help improve the world around us, both socially and environmentally. And so the idea of not doing this, just it doesn't make sense to me.
Your life sounds a little bit like a reporter's life, I've got to tell you. You know, a few years ago, some members of Congress purposely distorted a study by a professor. It's not the first time, but it stands out in my mind. He released a news release explaining how a study was abused. But most of the media reported on what those members of Congress said. Very few followed up and made clear what the scientist originally intended. What should that tell scientists and what should his colleagues have done about that?
You know, and that represents, I think, one of the great challenges. You know, when we present our work in scientific meetings and in seminars, the rules are clear and the discourse is polite and it's based on a certain set of values and norms. You enter the public debate, it's messy, it's chaotic. You do not control your message. Someone can represent it, and the number of people who go to the source article is very low. That doesn't mean you should not try. To simply sit back and say, well, we're just going to keep publishing in the academic journals while the issues we focus on get distorted and railroaded by purveyors of pseudoscience is not an answer either. So I think that a concerted effort to think about where are the lines between academic and advocacy. What are the rules of the game? How do you engage? When do you engage? How do you deal with the kind of attacks that one might get if you just Google Michael Mann or Catherine Hayhoe or any number of people who have just get really nasty stuff thrown at them? I can understand why a lot of academics would say, I don't want to be a part of that. But same token, if you're studying issues you really care about, I don't know how you sit on the sidelines and not bring the good work that you're doing into informing the public and political discourse.
So you mentioned these several people that have dealt with these issues. What kind of horror stories have we heard?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can, you know, I mentioned Michael Mann and Catherine Hayhoe. Catherine Hayhoe is an interesting story. She is a climate scientist at Texas Tech. She's also an evangelical. And she was writing a chapter for a book that that Newt Gingrich was publishing on conservative approaches to environmental issues. And that was then he ran for president and he was cornered in a press conference and someone said, what are you doing having a chapter on climate change? And he quickly said, it's out. And Rush Limbaugh picked it up and started ridiculing her as climate babe. But then the emails that started coming in were horrible. A lot of misogynist stuff, a lot of stuff attacking or threatening her children, just really crazy, crazy stuff. And it really started to pour in. Carrie Emanuel, a professor at MIT, a conservative, did an interview on a climate on climate change, and he reported a lot of hate mail coming in towards him and his wife. And this is enough to scare people away. You can talk about William Cronin at the University of Wisconsin. He weighed in on the union issues, and he got buried with FOIA requests. So there's all kinds of harassment that happens when academics enter into these public discourse, and it's a challenge.
So it's not only backlash, potential backlash from your institution, but public backlash and career backlash, it sounds like.
Well, public backlash for sure. Whether it affects your career or not, that remains to be seen. But there is also – there is some backlash within the academy, within the university. There are some within the university who see this kind of activity engaging in public and political discourse as anti-intellectual or a waste of time. You must not be a serious academic if you don't want to spend all your time doing academic work. Why do you want to engage in the public discourse? You can be seen as a media fill-in-the-blank if you are seen as being in the press too much. So it's about changing the rules of academia and also changing the norms of what's considered acceptable activity for a scholar.
There are some scientists who do go out and do hit the circuits and do go to protests and become real activists. I'm thinking of from NASA, James Hansen, who's written extensively on climate change, again, that issue that seems to get everybody upset one way or the other. And he basically at one point said, enough of this. I'm going to do more. I'm going to fully engage as an activist. What has his experience as an outside observer, what has that told the rest of academia in the nation?
Well, he made an active choice to step over a line he knew he was stepping over. Others have done it as well. Jeffrey Sachs, Paul Krugman. You know, these are very prominent people who have chosen to be pundits rather than academics. And it helps to have a Nobel Prize. That gives you a lot more leeway than the rest of us mere mortals do. But it also, he made a choice. The issue is far too important for him to stay within the confines of the academy. That's his choice. I think that the danger is for academics to do something that pushes them over the line and they didn't know it. And they've found that they've made a choice de facto. And so we need to get a clearer sense of how we're going to engage the game, also recognizing that this is something that varies not only by school but by your level within the university. And in my feeling, this is my opinion, we're still an apprentice model. So if you're a junior faculty member, you got to earn your bones. You got to do the academic work. Keep your foot in the relevancy of your issues. I don't think you can check your passions at the door for 7 years to get tenure and then suddenly think you can reignite them. By the same token, junior faculty who think that they can afford to waste a lot of time getting into messy debates when they're going to be evaluated for tenure based on academic publications, I think this is something that you earn once you become a full professor or an associate professor.
I want to ask you about that, though, because we have experts on many topics at the universities in our state. Don't you guys have an obligation to society to jump in to the rough and tumble world of debate to make sure that we understand the difference between facts and fancy?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, and we are going to have a conference on this at the University of Michigan in May, and that is going to be one of the issues we will bring up. Do we have an obligation, or is that the role of somebody else? There's the question. Do we do rigorous research that helps us understand the phenomena in the world around us? Yes. Is it our obligation to bring it to the rest of the world? That's an open question, and my personal feeling is that we need to diversify the models of what it means to be an academic, and some can stay within the realm of basic research and focus on the academic work, the sound academic work, and others can start to bring it down, I think of it like a supply chain, and bring it closer to the users. But again, always cognizant of that line and not crossing over that line to become seen as a subjective advocate rather than objective researcher.
So let's try to bottom line this. What are going to be the long-term effects on science and its role in society and society as a whole if researchers and academics don't speak up?
I personally think that's dangerous. On so many issues of our day, we live in a technological world, whether it's nanotech or nuclear power, GMOs or climate change. How do we make sense out of this if the subject matter experts are sitting on the sidelines not engaged in the debate? Now, there are many ways to get the ideas into the debate, but I do think that there are increasing pressures on the academy. Let's face it, it's becoming very expensive to go to a university. Some people are starting to ask questions about what is the value the university provides to society. A lot of state legislatures profess to say they don't see the value. Take a look at a number of states that are starting to make serious cutbacks in higher education. That signals a concern that academics live in an ivory tower and disconnected from the real world around them. And it's my personal feeling that at least some of us should start to develop the skills and the proficiency and the knowledge to engage in those debates and to help inform our democratic process, because People in this country, they vote. And if they don't understand the real issues, the real concerns around nuclear power or nanotech or GMOs or any of the other issues, then we're going to end up someplace we don't want to be.
Andrew Hoffman is the Holson Professor of Sustainable Enterprise and Director of the Erb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprise at the University of Michigan. Thanks very much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Lester.